Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jamaah.
Yes, I'll really tell you, having a beautiful time this morning. And when you look at so many things happening, and we're looking at messages coming through, and this one here says a female was, reaction unit, and they're talking about a 36-year-old female employed as a supervisor for the Itikweni municipality was gunned down on Old Main Road outside the Water and Sanitation Road and Stormwater Maintenance Depot in Ottawa, KZN. That was yesterday on Saturday, and reaction unit went through, and the female was dead there. And it's very sad indeed what's going on during this storm, and all these things happening, dead bodies being discovered, and many with gunshot wounds and this and that. I wonder what's really going on. But who better than our very own Ahmed Parak, Councillor Ahmed Parak, to keep us up to speed on Straight Talk with Councillor Ahmed Parak. Ahmed, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. And tell me, how are you doing this fine, beautiful morning?
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Alan and salam to all our radio listeners. Alhamdulillah, what a beautiful set Sunday morning today, Shafat.
Absolutely, Ahmed. And you know, you're in the thick of things. What's these killings all about? I mean, here we have an Itikweni employee being shot dead, 36 years old, and from the Water and Sanitation Department. Tell us, what's going on? Who are these people going around and killing, fellow colleagues, or killing the, perhaps many say their own kind, Ahmed?
Shafat, what we need to take into account is at the municipality, you know, if you got somebody brighter than you and say that we will be able to do that in 24 hours, and you get a team that there will be other opposition in the same team, they say, no, you need to put it for 3-4 days, because in terms of the management and disaster act, the city is allowed to give you overtime. So they want to pull for overtime, and this is where. And if you're not going to play the game, and this is what happens to you, they gun you down. This is how this system's working in the council at the moment.
Very sad indeed, and you hit the nail on the head. It's a very unsavory situation. And are they actually wasting our money as ratepayers by being exploited to the hilt, Ahmed? And, what a challenge it is for especially yourself and many other opposition party members to fight against this culture of deceit, Ahmed?
Shafat, everywhere we move, the opposition party, we, as when you come and attack the systems and the ANC in council, you need to take cover all the time. You need to watch your back, what you're doing, where you're going, and how you speak. And at the end of the day, they know we as Action SA, the opposition parties and some of the other parties, we're fighting all the way. We have proven to them in the latest episode about before the disaster that they wanted to bring a city manager, and we refused and we won that. So they have now come to realization that, they're not going to have it their way anymore. So this is where the problem comes in now. So, the only thing we can do is keep fighting. And the only thing you need to do is cover your back every time you're moving around.
Yeah, as you said, you have to cover your back. And, many stories have appeared during this disaster time. And you were having, issues with some officials when it came to Kafan Dafan. And, you wanted to release a Muslim body. And talk to us about that, Ahmed. And, you are a man that, if you want a solution, you're a man that gets things done and you walk the talk. Talk to us about what was happening when you tried to get a mayor released, Ahmed.
Shafar, there was a brother from Amzinto by the name of Sayed who passed away, and he was shot. First and foremost, the press is giving you an information. There's only 560 bodies or 540 bodies. But in actual fact, the numbers are much greater. The true reflection has not even come out yet. But I can tell you, because I've got experience in this, especially this Dafan Kafan work, and been working with the mortuary, and I specialize especially with government in terms of mortuaries. And from the people on the ground and the people who pick up bodies and taking them to the morgue, if the Department of Health could be able to cope and bring previously the bodies to from the hospital, from the scene of accidents. In this disaster, they couldn't cope. They had to. We had to use the South African police chefs to come and pick up bodies from various flood areas and everything else. So the numbers that they are claiming is about 540, 560 is not the true reflection. It is much more than this. In the next week or so, you will know it will be nothing less than 1,200 bodies in that was found in this flood recently. And if you take the Sayed, the poor brother who was shot, how he got shot, we haven't got the full report on that. But he was there from Thursday last week. Now, the manager at the Park Reni mortuary, he's got a system of a first-come, first-served basis. Like, you know, he's got a number system and so many bodies. Each mortuary cannot do more than 20 bodies a day. And if he's got about 200 bodies, you know how long he's going to take. If divide that 200 by 20, he'll tell you the numbers, how many bodies you want to get per week. And then that will tell. It'll take him at least 2 weeks, just plus minus 2 weeks to do those 200 bodies. And they work Monday to Sunday, but Saturday, Sunday, they do any hut. They only do emergency bodies. So eventually I managed on Monday to get the x-ray done. Now, because of the queuing system, the poor brother, we only managed to get his body on Thursday, the day before yesterday. On Thursday, we managed to get his body. I have personally spoken to the chief of pathologists in the province by the name of Dr. Msele. I said, in terms of our right of religion, right of culture, you have not performed here. And furthermore, there is no queuing system in terms of the act. We, from the old apartheid government, have got a standing order. A standing order is that whenever a Muslim body comes in, priority need to be given because we're very quick as possible. The Jewish faith and the Hindu faith. Hindu faith, they take maybe a day or so or day and a half, but we're very quick as possible. In terms of that act, I have quoted to him. I said to him, I sent him a very, very nasty letter on Thursday, Shafat. And I made myself very, very clear. If this is not being remedied in the next 24 hours, and if I do not get an apology from your department, what actually has transpired, and you have put me in a queuing system. There is one manager at the Park Reni mortuary. He's an anti-Indian, anti-Muslim, whatever you can call him. So he's the one that's giving us a hard time. So I've sent this letter through to him. My PA told me yesterday, because I was doing distribution of groceries and water, he says, I've just received a mail. Late Friday, the chief pathologist wants to have a meeting with me. I said we will go for that meeting, but if there is no apology on the table, I'm going to the next step. What we are going to do is, Shafat, is get all our burial society services together, do a petition. I'm going to bring an application to the High Court in terms of right of religion, right of culture, and the standing order. I will make it a court order, which means whenever we got a body at any one of the mortuaries, we take that court order. In terms of that court order, they have to do it within a specific time. It might take 3 hours, 4 hours, but they have to do it. So that way, we have got something to fall back on. Although the legislation is there, but a court order will make it, and if he hasn't performed, then I bring it up, we go to court and say, you know what, some mortuary hasn't did it. The manager and the chief of pathology in KZN, he can get arrested. So that's the way I'm going now. Because I think I have had a lot of patience in the last 1 week with this episode here. And I've come to a conclusion that now is a time I want to nail them once and for all. So in case one day if I'm not here, that system will take place. We have got a precedent set in terms of a legislation that the Department of Health need to give service delivery to the Muslim community, the Hindu community, and the Jewish faith, Shafat.
JazakAllah for sharing that with us, Ahmed, and Allah bless you for that. And also, you know, I remember you talking about you going out to the ships with the, you know, the SAPS, or was it NSRI, and there was this Pakistani brother that had passed on. And, you know, someone was talking to me the other day, and he said, please ask Ahmed, where did they bury that brother? Did you get the body out? You flew it back with the helicopter? And, you know, where was the ghusl and all those given? And where was he buried, Ahmed?
Right. So, but before I answer that question, in most mortuaries, the lame excuse that Pakrani gave us, that the pumps were not working because they didn't have water. And that is a very, very lame excuse. You take one pump out and you put another pump and you get your water supply. They had the water there, but they didn't have, you know, the pump was not working. And this is just a delaying tactic it was. That's on the Pakrani issue. Coming also in Phoenix mortuary, they were having problem. They got like about 300 bodies there that post-mortem has to be done. I spoke to the manager and I said, you know what? We got one, two Muslim bodies. We need that body. He says, you know what, Mr. Farooq, we got a major problem. We don't have water. I said, don't worry. Within 4 hours, we put a 5,000-liter JoJo tank there. And I made sure the tank was full, and now they can't give us excuse that they don't have water because now we gave them a JoJo tank. That is, we sorted that out. And the manager phoned me back. He says, you know, that was a big relief. At least now the work is taking place. They're working till late and everything, but now at least they've got water. For us, the one that where I brought that body from 100 nautical miles, where the guy hanged himself, we brought it back to the, it has, you know, once if it's suicide or any gunshot, anything, post-mortem has to be done. And because it happened in the South African shores, we had to do a post-mortem, and at that time, Gale Street mortuary was open. We did a post-mortem. Once the post-mortem was done, the shipping agent has got all the rights now with the family, and we liaised with the family, and I was instrumental in liaising with the family. Fortunately, I speak Urdu like you, and we spoke to the family in Pakistan. They said, okay, fine. We got all the paperwork done. We did the embalming. I've got a coffin. Everything was done. We've sealed that the coffin, and the body was shipped back to Pakistan because the family insisted that the body must come back to Pakistan. So with Emirates from Durban, the next day they had the body in Pakistan, Shafat.
Well done, Ahmed, and a lovely conversation with you. Whilst you're talking, Ahmed, there are lots of questions coming through for you on the screen. And I remember the segment is called Straight Talk with the Councillor Ahmed Parak. Amin says, Assalamu alaikum. I already enjoy this program. Ahmed Parak, nearly 13% of the country's 59 million people, or maybe now it's gone to 60 odd million people live in shacks or informal settlements. That was the government statistics in 2019. Ahmed, I want to know, what is the latest updates and which province has the highest numbers of informal settlements? JazakAllah khair. I'll be listening over the radio. Good question there from Amin. How you respond to that, Ahmed?
Shafat, if you take Itigwini only, I'm not talking about the other provinces, Tigwini alone, informal settlement, what we called in layman's language, the Jondols, 540 informal settlements we got only in the city, in 111 wards. We got the city in Durban, we got 111 wards, 540 informal settlement that is documented with the Tigwini municipality. You're looking at about 35,000 people are living in shacks. That's the number. Going to the other provinces, I cannot give you, I don't have the stats or anything like that, but a lot of these sheds, jondals and informals, were washed out. They have got nothing. And some of my workers at my factory too, they had nothing. I've been giving them groceries, bedding and blankets and all that. So, you know, because they come from rural area, when they come here, and they got in all these shacks, they got one, like in one tuna. You give him like 500 rand, he give you one small, like 5x5 or 10x10. He said, that's your section. And that's how they do it. But the city has now taken a decision that all these informal settlements, to get them housed, Shafaat, you're looking at 30 years plan. You won't see it, I'm not going to see it, but maybe our grandchildren may be able to see that it might happen. But this is the plan. You can't do anything about this informal settlement. You want to have this problem because they use paraffin stoves. They're using gas cylinders to do cooking and all that. You'll find some of them rushing to work and they leave it on. And the whole shack have been burnt. And you've been hearing this recently. This is what's happening. But the shacks is a big, major, major issue has brought the city down to its pits in terms of sanitation, water. And then if you look at the Mabel Shack, and by one by the Clear Estate, when I went there, when I was campaigning last year, Shafaat, you won't believe it, there must be at least anything between 5,500 to 6,000 people living in that shack there. Not one toilet. I asked a few people, how you are going to leave your people self? He says, there's the bushes and all, that's where we go. That's the only thing we can do. So Action SA, we went and bought second-hand mobile toilets and we have put up there. So, you know, that's it. They know we put up whatever we could assist, we managed to get that. But the city is not doing anything about it. That is the issue, that where the city is supposed to be assisting the community, they're not doing that. And, you know, you're collecting rates, tax, and okay, fine, those people don't pay no rates or anything like that. You know, they're in checks because there's no facilities. But they've got electricity there. You'll see if you go there, they've got DSTV and all that. Shafaat, you'll be shocked what you see in the shacks. You know, when you go to India, like they got the shacks there, and you know, you got millionaires in those shacks. It's coming to that stage here in Durban, it seems like it.
You know, but you make a valid point. You gave us a figure of 540 informal settlements, 35,000 people living there. And I want to know, out of the 35,000 people, how many are working and how many are, you know, perhaps the scavenging of the city? And another point to make is, I was talking to someone from the informal settlements, and he was telling me, the government has been giving us houses, but what we do, as soon as we move out from our shack, we give it out to another individual. The shack is never empty, or the informal settlement is never empty, because there's always someone moving out, someone coming in, someone moving. So the government doesn't have a system in place, because by now most of the informal settlements should have been empty, and people have been housed for the past maybe 10 or 12 years. But how do you cap that up? How do you close that loophole that these people are having, that the informal settlement never will be empty, it will always be full? Because when the person that's moving out is always telling another person, come, give me $200 or $500, I got a space for you. Ahmad?
Shafaat, it's very, very simple. Let's take the Clear Estate informal settlement. That must be, if you take total square meters, you will stay there is 10,000 square meters. And there's, in the 10,000 square meters, as I said, between 5,500 to 6,000 people are living there in those shacks. Soon as you have given 200 houses, you barricade that area, those 200, you have taken it up, fence it up. That's done. You can't put anybody there and put barbed wire on the top, your problem. As you are going, you keep extending your fence line. And in no time, you won't have that. And the shacks will be out completely. And put many industries there. There's so many other things that we're looking for land. We can utilize that for other major industries that are looking for land. These are all prime land that is being invaded by shacks. So that's the only way. There is a way to do it. But the government is not doing it for one reason only, and that is Shafaat. If you take those checks out, where are the ANC going to get the votes? That is the criteria.
Sad indeed, and it's at the expenses of the ratepayers that are living in the area. And, you know, with the recent disasters, I'm reading headlines in the newspapers where, you know, residents are saying they fear land invasion because of this disaster recently. What's your reaction there, Ahmad?
that's going to happen, because there's no more shacks. There's, some of the shacks are completely don't exist. Maybe if you take some of these areas where the shacks, they had like maybe 5,000 shacks or 3,000 shacks, maybe 2,000 shacks is washed away. And then they don't have the money or anything to come and put those shacks up again. And that might be, you know, that's the only way the city can now start cleaning up the system and do something. And in fact, I have come up with a suggestion to this deputy mayor. We can give them a 30 by 30, you know, a metal frame, housing for them, and they must provide the land. And we can assist from the via the community and do a JV with the government, and let's start giving them better facilities. And in no time, you can clean up this whole city, and you will be able to make it easier for the community.
Yeah, you know, Ahmed, the apartheid government, really emphasized greatly on sports and giving us the sporting facilities. And both you and I, we played our cricket, we played our tennis, we played on the beautiful sports fields of Springer Beach. And, you know, we're talking about these people in the informal settlements. They are virtually living in areas that is swampy conditions, areas that is very hazardous to health and so forth. And whenever they'll... It seems even at school, sports has been taken out of the equation, Ahmed.
Shafat, you know, in our days, we had the facilities and we look after this facility. That's the beauty part. Yeah, they give them the facility. They won't even, you know, when we wanted to play, we saw the field was uneven. We made sure we brought all our guys together, all various other teams and all came together. Let's fill this thing before somebody damaged the ankle or knee or whatever. We did something about it. Yeah, nobody wants to do anything. That's where the problem is. And if you take the schools, I went to Kwame Kuta, Shafat, when I saw that school, you will be shocked. There's 3 feeder school into that high school. In each class, they got 75 students in one class. Where you saw one teacher with 75 students in one class, you cannot. It's virtually impossible to teach somebody like that. And then you get in one class, I saw 156, I counted myself. How a teacher can teach 156 students? 3 feeder school, 1 high school, 660 students in that school, male and female, 4 toilets. How do you answer that? You can't. It's virtually impossible. We now going in there, and I went to the deputy minister, deputy mayor. We drove down together. We had a look. Now we got the architects. They're drawing their plans. We're just waiting for national government to give us the go-ahead. We don't want money from them. We have got sponsors lined up to do that school.
Hamza Ahmed already. By the way, the deputy mayor is not an ANC councillor.
No, he's not an ANC councillor. He's ABC.
Okay, ABC. All right. Ahmed is doing it there. ABC, as long as it's not tumble down D, the work has to be done. Rolf says, Assalamu alaikum. A great chat indeed, Shafa'at and Ahmed Parak. It says that 30 years later, we're still blaming apartheid for poor blacks who are stripped of land ownership. The fact is, everyone wants to live in cities and suburbs on a free tick. The leadership is too busy stealing and trebling the bank balances and creeping up to the conglomerates. How do you react to Rauf, Ahmed?
Shabbat, we just spoke earlier on. We managed not to get this new city manager in because we only got a deputy city manager. If we are succeeding in what we are doing at the moment, and in the next, before 2024, inshallah, I'm saying, and what the fight we putting up, we can get the city from the second best city in the world to number 46 in the world. It talks for itself. So the city has got so much of potential. Shafat, you go all over the world. You have been also. There is no city or anywhere like South Africa. Anybody, even if you go and pick up cardboards or you pick up rags, you will be able to sell. You do anything, you will be able to make money in this country. Why do you think all these foreigners becoming millionaires in our country? They come here. It's so easy to make money in this country. You'll see, go to Grey Street, go to Prince Edward Street. Who's owning all those shops there? And they're all making money. They're making gold money. They said it's better than what they were in the old in their country. I know one or two guys, they got properties and they got not one flat, they got 4 or 5 flats and they're getting income from those flats. So if foreigners can come into our country and can make money, you mean our own locals can't do it, Shafa? They are lazy. They need to get up and say, let's all get together, let's work. And we work and we can, with this country, we can outclass China, India, all over, all this, because we got the ammunition, we got the manpower in this country. But because of the unions and the red tape we have in this country, that is giving them more. The worker has got more protection than the employer. Where you saw that? You need to open that up. Once you open that up, Shafat, I guarantee you, even in the clothing industry, you'll be able to employ. Only in Durban, KZN, 200,000 people will be employed. In within 1 month, I can promise you we can get it done. Because our labor is cheap and our garments you make here is much better than you're getting from China where you wash and cry.
Well, Ahmed, you're talking there and you're really talking. Many are listening to you. Atullah says, Assalamu alaikum. It is a free-for-all, Shafaat Ahmed Parak. Informal settlements are built on riverbanks or marshy land in short occupying lands on floodplains. Now the deadly consequences. Durban and surrounding areas cannot handle this influx, Ahmed Parak. Have we lost our city and suburbs to lawlessness? These are people that have come here are all opportunists, and most of them, as our Minister of Home Affairs says, are criminals that have come here and occupied our city. How do you respond to Atullah, Ahmed?
Shabbat, you go anywhere in the world. First thing, you want to travel now to France, you need a visa. And they specify in that visa, you only got 30 days visa. It is put into the computer. On the 31st day, they can track you down. They'll know. You know what? When you are leaving the country, you had an extended stay for 2-3 days because of whatever reason. When you go there, you're going to pay a fine. You're not going to come on just scot-free like that because now you overstayed for the 2 days. Our borders are like free for all. It is open and you just bribe the Home Affairs Home Office officials there, the SAPS there, the border control. In no time. That time, the border control, from my understanding, and I got a very close friend in Lesotho, that guy in South African Home Affairs in that border post there, he said he makes himself $2,000 a day. Plus he gets his salary. He's living like a king because this is how the system is. People paying and they're just coming. You got people here. You saw the Pakistani got caught. You saw what happened to EFF. How they were making, why you think they were fighting that they don't want this that new movement that was trying to curb all the foreigners here? Because they were making passports and they're making South African IDs, and the Pakistani was making the kingpin. All of the kingpins are all behind bars at the moment. And if we can control all this, and in fact, there's a policy coming, I think it may be end of June or July. Within that period, if you cannot produce your paperwork, you need to leave the country. And that is right. That's what they should be doing. If you here legally, your paperwork is in place, then you stay here. You know, like we go to Australia for better pastors, Australia, UK, or Dubai, you go and stay. You do your paperwork, and then they only accept you. Otherwise, they don't accept you. They say you go back to your homeland.
And Shabila Batoi, she's got a big job to do, Ahmed, but we'll keep out of this. Mackie says, Assalamu alaikum, this is my nickname, he says. Imagine keeping up to date with our municipal bills, Ahmed Parak. We are still discriminated by these municipal officials who have a chip on the shoulder. Deep down, they know they have not made the grade, but they are looting and they have this gall to treat us like dirt when we are paying the salary. Please, Ahmed, tell them that we are the charos and we are the mainos. How do you respond to Mackie?
Mackie is 100% right. You know, one thing Mackie must also take into account. Ramaphosa has got Shamila Batoi there, and she's got till the 30th of June. And if she doesn't produce what the Zondo Commission report has brought in place, she has already one big advantage. We got Shafat. They have already put a very, very powerful task team to start investigating. And that has already started. Now you'll see a lot of heads going to be rolling very, very soon. And you're going to see they're going to get charged. They're going to be brought before court. They will be out on bail. And it will take its process. You know, court matters can take anything up to 2 years, 2.5 years sometimes because of its process. But the mere fact is they are going to be charged. And once you are being charged and you are a government official, the rule is a step aside rule. You need to step aside. So that is in place. That's the big advantage we got at the moment with what Ramaphosa have put in place. The Zondo Commission report it cost us millions of rand, but the report has come out. Now it is scrutiny for the public as well. And it's been with Shamila Bhatta, and she has to act very, very quickly. And she has brought in more advocates to assist her. She brought a very, very good task team to head that investigation and start arresting. So that is a big plus factor we have got at our doorstep at the moment.
Yeah, then you get a Zondo Commission wants an extension. What's wrong with him? He wants extension. Looks like he's enjoying the pension money he'll get soon, Ahmed.
Extension is all over now. Zondo has finished all his. The third report was handed over last week to Ramaphosa. There is no more. Now he is also the Chief Justice at the Concord. So there's no more Zondo Commission. Zondo Commission has come to an end now.
Right, you heard it, Ahmed said, hey, he's Chief Justice, he's not Deputy Justice now. Okay, well said, Ahmed. Tariq says, surely, Ahmed, this disaster has shown us ANC officials are always on the lookout for a quick luck, water, food hampers, etc. When they get caught, Ahmed, they want to take us to court. Please, your comments.
Shafan, you know, this disaster management brought for the ANC, brought some little bit of life to them, because it will be very, very easy to take out money from the coffers of the city and from the government. Is easy because now everything is urgent. You need water there, it becomes urgent. You need to employ, the city need to employ additional outsourced constructor to come and fix your pipe, your electricity, outsource. They're going to bring them in terms of Section 36. They don't have to come before the council, and they can do it. So, you know, this has paved the way for them to loot now more, because where the contractor was charging 250 rand an hour, he's going to charge now 1,000 rand an hour, because somebody is going to get paid from there as well. So this is what's going to happen now. And there's no way you can stop that now, because everything you look at, it is urgent. You'll see at Bayhead, the port has come to a standstill. You go to King, I got a call yesterday, which I'm sorting out water for Prince Misheni. The paper, today's paper says hospital staff slam lack of water. So, you know, things like this has brought the city down to its knees at the moment, Shafar.
Alhamdulillah, Ahmed, already walking the talk, people. Yeah, putting JoJo tanks all over. Yes, this question from Abe, then he says, what has the South African National Defence Force done thus far, Ahmed Parak? In our area in the North Coast, no sight and sound of them. Are they busy chowing KFC, jaws working overtime? Ahmed, the listeners are already rocking us this morning, Ahmed.
Shafat, the South African Defence Force, we brought them mainly. They're on a standby at the moment because there's nothing major happening. There was a little bit looting, wherever the looting. And then, fortunately, after the last lesson we learned from the July 2021 looting, the intelligence were right on top of the game, because they got a complete new intelligence. They picked it up. There was a few areas where the looting was taking place. That's where they were being deployed. Mainly, the South African Defence Force was brought in purely because of the helicopters we needed to go to take Marin Hill. The one section is you can get services in terms of bread, milk, you can get whatever you need on the one side. There is a road, but the roads are not in good order when I went last week, Sunday. But the other section where the bridge and the road, there is no more bridge there. The bridge came into two pieces. There is no road. The road broke in 3-4 pieces. So there's no roads or the bridge is there. So you can't get no services to those people there. So therefore, we had to bring in the helicopters to give them supplies, especially water, milk, and whatever we can give. Especially there was a lot of babies in that area there, so we had to give them bread, milk, as well as the baby powder and everything else we had to send through to them there.
Alhamdulillah, Rashid says, Assalamu alaikum. Does a toll-free road in KZN mean that I travel without paying fees from Peter Maritzburg to Durban? How do you respond to Rashid?
Shafat, if the road is not in working condition, then the toll fee in terms of the act will be you don't have to pay. But if the road is in 100% and is working in working order, then you have to pay your toll fees.
Nopal says, Assalamu alaikum. Great show indeed. Toyota South Africa in Prospecton has been badly hit by the flood, Ahmed. Reports suggest that 500 vehicles will be scrapped and it has broken sales record for the past 42 years. I didn't know that. How has the plant benefited Sapingo and its residents? What have they put in? Good contribution from Nopal, Ahmed.
Shafat, when I did my notes for you for this morning, Toyota Motor South Africa Prospectin was very, very badly hit. And in fact, I've got the minutes of the Tigwini municipality, which for our 28th meeting, where there'll be a full council meeting. And that is on our agenda at the moment. And the major issue there, Toyota, they will do everything in their power to make sure Toyota is being given the electricity quick as possible, even if they have to fly the valves or whatever they need from overseas, they will get them up and running. And in fact, they are working 24/7 on their Toyota. And Toyota has taken a huge betting in terms of their vehicles. Their vehicles were parked in the old Hyperama building. They bought Hyperama building, purchased by Toyota many years ago. So all the new vehicles were there. So they have a huge problem. And there's so many people that have been laid off work because of they cannot work because they have to still mop up first before they can even bring. You can't put the machinery on because everything was waterlogged. So, the workers are going to have a problem. The owners in Japan are taking up. Obviously, they insure for millions of rand, and their insurance come from Lloyd's of London than the locals in South Africa. So they have mainly I don't think they got anything to worry for. But we have to provide them to the electricity and water quick as possible to get all those workers back in Prospecton.
Yeah, and this is a very powerful economic hub, Ahmed, when you look at the South Basin. I mean, both you and I grew up in this area, but we never knew that we lived in such a powerful area. SAPREF, you had Toyota SA, I mean, that's a Toyota city, and so forth. We had ANCI and all that. But we lived in a very polluted area, Ahmed.
We did live in a very, but fortunately, we have the sea. When you get pollution and when you got the sea, that makes a big difference. So everything has been pulled away by the sea. So that's one big advantage. So therefore, it's not like if you go to Ascot, there was an asbestos company there. In that one road alone, Shafat, I went there personally. And in that one road, there must be about 20 houses. From the 20 houses, 18 had cancer. The reason was because of the asbestos factory.
So those people that living in Mirbank, some of them say, hey, chef, I'm addicted to the pollution. I can't go live anywhere in the world. I have to live in Mirbank near the refinery. So is the sea playing a factor there too, Ahmed?
Yeah, sea plays a big factor because you get the breeze from the sea, it pulls all your pollution away.
Hey, I tell you, the washing machine, the best washing machine in the world, is the Indian Ocean people. Anonymous says, Assalamu alaikum. What a lovely chat. Both of you need compliments. Okay, Jazakallah khair. It says, is our shameless government aware that NGOs and many private individuals have come to the fore during the disaster? Shocking how they are so smug and feel entitled to sit back and plan another looting scam. How do you respond to Anonymous here, Ahmad?
Shafat, you know, yesterday we did an analysis and I was in the office and I had my PA with me because I was doing distribution and everything. And we did an analysis. 80% of donations, blankets, water, groceries, bedding, you name it, from the gift of the givers, Alindar Foundation, Jamatul Ulama, Darul Ehsan, you know, all the NGOs stood up, 80% were from the Muslim community. The others was very, very small. Yes, Give of the Givers got a lot of big money from some of the white big corporate companies. They have given him, I read yesterday, there was one mail came through to me, and then one of the top corporate gave Give of the Givers 10 million rand for the disaster to assist the community in KZN. So, you know, there is, but the main factor is who stood up. Where are the DAs? Where are the ANCs? Nobody is doing anything. It's, firstly, we're in the month of fasting. Our hearts are big. Our pockets are big. We are giving and we are giving. And Shafat, you, even if you give for the next, after Ramzan too, it won't be enough. It is, you go out there, it is so bad, you won't believe how bad it is. In fact, if you are available, I think it is Tuesday or Wednesday, we're going with a helicopter to do a last final assessment. You can join me and you'll see for yourself. When you see for yourself, then you'll know how bad this flood is at the moment.
Hey, I got you, Ahmad. Yeah, you do the flying and we can do the talking on the radio station. Alhamdulillah, absolutely brilliant. And, you know, I talked to quite a few individuals, and I was talking to the professor from the Northwest University, and he said, Shafat, if I had to give my money, I will give it to Dr. Imtiaz Suleiman. And this is how non-Muslims have so much of confidence in this individual from the gift of the givers. Ahmad, you're absolutely, mashallah, as usual, walking the talk. And perhaps your parting words this morning?
Shabbat, we need to make dua. Not for us only, make dua for the community. This community needs us badly. You know, we must, you know, we always look after our own Muslim brothers and sisters, but now we have to look after the community. The community needs us more than anybody else at the moment. It is bad, bad. You know, when I did an assessment in Chatsworth, there's about 8 or 10 families there. And you won't believe, in one room there was 8 of them, and all of them were fasting. I asked them, how are you? How are you doing? And all that. He says, you know, we're living on khajur and water. And that is sad. I got one brother, met me at the mosque. He said, you know, Ahmad, after I heard you, I have cut 7 sheep. By Tuesday, you can have it. Go and give those families for Eid. At least they will have a nice Eid Shafat.
Yes, Ahmad, as usual, Allah bless you, Allah keep you, and always an asset to us in the broadcasting world, where you give us an information right from the fields, Ahmad. You have a mashallah and a blessed day ahead. Remember us in your pious du'as as we remember you. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi.
Marcus Sahaba, the voice of Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah.